We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Appearing right now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, we welcome in Al Pawlowski, who was there in over the weekend. Terrific job, Al. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot. Great to be here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me ask you something since... And we'll get to Jim Thome and Hall of Fame weekend, which I know you didn't get a chance to be at, but you certainly have a lot of fond memories of Jim Thome. But Ken got a little upset with me because I said on Friday that the Indians have been a bit of a disappointment this year. And his argument, which I understand, is they're in first place. They're going to win the division.
Actually, you didn't understand. You argued with me that you didn't understand last week. Well, what you said.
I understand the facet of they're in first place. However, in any other division, obviously, they would not be in first place, and they would have some major issues, and we'd be talking about whether or not they'd make the playoffs.
Amazing what a weekend does for you.
So, Al, well, no, I don't think this weekend against Detroit proved anything.
Go ahead and ask the man the question.
All right, Al, can we put you on hold? Kenny and I have an argument together.
I'm just trying to point out over here that you took umbrage with what I said, and now that Al Pawlowski's here, everything's all hunky-dory, Al, and don't even need to worry about
it.
Dare I say you're pussyfooting around the situation in front of Al Pawlowski? I say yes.
Al, I still think they've been a bit of a disappointment. How would you
characterize? Pac-Man Jones doesn't come in studio.
How would you characterize so far this season, since Ken will never admit that any Cleveland team is having a poor season?
Well, and first let me tell you, you guys seem to have a lot like what me and Jensen have going on chemistry-wise. But I think that's good. I like it. I like it a lot. Record-wise, would you have hoped the Indians would have won a few more games by now or assume they would? I think so. I think that's fair to say. However, being in first place by the margin they are, everybody else in the Central has given up by judging by the trade deadline. Is it a guaranteed thing now? No, but I'd say it's about 99% certain that the Indians are going to win the American League Central. So they're going to be in the postseason. There's been a theory that if they were in a more competitive division, would they have more wins? And I think so. But the positive to that is this. You've got some time now to shape your playoff roster. You've pretty much had it all season long. You don't have to rush a guy back like Andrew Miller, who, has been on rehab now for a little while, who the other night, got... So hit around a little bit by some Class A hitters. So, making sure he's comfortable, making sure he's healthy, making trades that you know are going to benefit you in the playoffs even more than the regular season, where you don't have to make a trade saying, okay, look, we're only up by a couple of games in this division. We have to do something right now. We maybe have to overspend and give too many prospects up for a guy that's going to help us get to first place. So those are the positives with it, even though, the record could be a little bit better. And with the trade deadline coming up, guys, I love the Hand and Simber. I love getting both of those guys for Mejia. Big acquisition. But I've got this feeling the Indians aren't done. And if they don't get something done by the trade deadline here in July, I think something will happen in August.
How is Corey Kluber? Because he was great yesterday, but I don't want to just all of a sudden go, everything's just perfectly fine now that he had a really great outing. I mean, people were saying it was vintage Corey Kluber. I still think that's current Corey Kluber. Maybe it was a couple of rough outings, and I know he had the injection in the knee. How is he feeling? How are things progressing with this man?
Well, it looks like he's getting back to where he was. I think you're right, Ken. I don't know if he's completely there yet, but I think he took a big step forward yesterday. He lost his release point a little bit or his arm slot or however you'd like to determine it, but basically his pitches weren't coming from the same place that they were previously, and that was probably due to, favoring that knee a little bit or, he's got some soreness. A lot of pitchers, once we get into August, they've got some soreness, whether it's in their arms or in their legs, and that's normal. Kluber, with his knee, seemed to be a little bit, outside the norm, a little more pain. That's why he needed the injection. So now I think what he's trying to do, and I think what yesterday helped him with a lot, he got a lot of reps on the mound with a nice lead so he could pitch to what, I don't want to say it was a spring training sort of situation, but in spring training, the pitcher is always going to pitch to what he wants to work on, regardless of who is hitting. While in the regular season, you've got to pitch to win against every single batter, unless you've got a comfortable lead that you feel good about. I think that's what Kluber was able to do yesterday. He had that nice lead. He was able to work on some things, find that rhythm again. So I don't know if he's completely back, but I think that he's definitely taken a big step forward to finding that release point once again.
Al Pawlowski joining us on the hotline. You said You know, Ken earlier in the show said something interesting about this slump that supposedly Jose Ramirez is mired in, and he's being facetious because he's still getting on base. I mean, this is what's amazing about this guy is that he's such a well-balanced player that even when he's struggling, maybe just not getting hits, he's still getting on base and he's still making things happen for this team. If this is a slump, then you're in pretty good shape with Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's something like 0 for his last 15 or thereabouts. However, in his last 25 or 26 plate appearances, he has 10 walks. So his on-base percentage is going up. He's a base stealer. He stole a base yesterday. He has 23 on the season to lead the club. So if you get him on base, he can score runs. You know, he steals bases. Yesterday, he hit a sacrifice fly. That's a run batted in. So that's the great thing about Jose, if you want to say he's in a slump. And he didn't have a hit all weekend, so I guess you could make that argument. And for him, I guess this would be a slump. For most batters, they would take, I don't know, 25 plate appearances, 10 walks, and a couple of runs batted in that scenario. But that is the great thing about him. That's why he's an MVP candidate, because even when he's in a quote-unquote slump, he still finds a way to be productive. And, boy, his glove at third base, that's the other thing, too. He's playing gold glove caliber third base for you, so he contributes in more than just one way.
Al Pulaski with us. If you were there to determine in a big game how to set up the bullpen, I know that's a trick question, considering Tito basically does this day by day, minute by minute. But if you're sitting there in a big playoff game, how would you use the bullpen? We've got questions about who would work the ninth now. Would you want Hand in there? Now Andrew Miller, who is, you know, trying to come back and on the rehab, and obviously we don't know how healthy he's going to be. How would Al Pulaski handle it?
Assuming that you have Miller back, you know, reasonably close to the level he was in 2016. And that was, you know, maybe the best pitcher on the planet at that time. So I don't know if he could ever get back there because that bar was set so high. But let's assume you have him, you have Hand, you have Allen, and you have Simber, who I really like. And this kid's going to be a part of the bullpen for the future. If you've got, you know, the Yankees coming up, who's at the plate, for example? If you've got a number of righties coming up, if you've got Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, then I'm going with Allen or I'm going with Simber. If it's earlier in the game, I'm going with Simber. If it's later, I'm going with Allen. If you've got lefties coming up, then I'm going to use first, I think I use Andrew Miller because he's shown you in the past he can come in early and maybe even give you multiple innings, and I save Hand for the eighth or the ninth. Assuming Cody Allen gets back to the level of consistency he was at, and I think he's going to get there, I think Allen and Hand are your guys in the eighth and ninth. I think Simber and Miller are your guys in the sixth and seventh. In an ideal situation where you can use all four, you're not concerned about rest, and you just simply look at who's coming up on that other side. If it's lefties, you use the lefties. If it's righties, you use the righties. That would be my ultimate determining factor late in a game because all these guys are pretty similar. Simber, not quite at the level and doesn't have the track record, obviously, of Miller, Hand, or Allen. But all these guys are pretty similar as far as relief pitching goes. So I think I go with the matchups.
Al Pulaski joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Jim told me yesterday he goes into the Hall of Fame, 612 home runs. I knew that he and Charlie Manuel were close. I didn't realize he was kind of an afterthought. Jim told me he was kind of an afterthought, and it was really Charlie Manuel who brought him along. That was something I always thought he was more of a Harmon Killebrew, Herculean type of home run hitter. It took until the recent years where I realized just how much he played into his career.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ken, because Tommy coming up, some of the guys that I talked to said that he was on a summer league team, you know, I think it was a Connie Mack team, but something along those lines age-wise, and he was very good. He was on a great team. Problem was there were three or four guys that were better than he was on those teams. Then he gets into pro ball, and in the minor leagues, he was a good hitter, but in the low minors, there always seemed to be a couple of guys that were more advanced, better than he was. He came up through the ranks. He had that power. As he matured, he really developed that power. Defensively, he was never a gold glover at third base, obviously. He was average fielding, below average arm as far as accuracy went. So up until the time he got to the major leagues, maybe the year before that in AAA, he started to take off a little bit. But he came to the majors in 91. If you remember, he went down again. And in 1993, he was batting near 400 in August when they recalled him. I remember when he came up, he was playing for Charlotte, the Indians' AAA team at the time, and he was tearing the cover off the ball, both average-wise and hitting for power. So then he came up at the end of 93, and that was that. He was up to stay in the majors. But even on those teams, He didn't bat cleanup at the beginning of the year. He and Ramirez and Sandy Alomar were batting in the lower part of the order because, why? Well, you had Carlos Baerga hitting third. You had Albert Bell hitting fourth. You had Eddie Murray batting fifth. So there wasn't any spot for him in the middle of the order. Charlie Manuel was always his biggest supporter. He was considered a surrogate-type father, a father figure for Jim. Always was in his corner, always believed he could do exactly what he wound up doing in his professional career. But he was not that superstar. He was not that stud, really, until the later 90s in Cleveland and the early part of the 21st century. So that's what's fascinating about him. He was never the guy until it was a little bit later in his career, and then, man, he took off. He played what seemed like forever. He hit home runs even to his last couple of years that he played Major League Baseball. So here's a great story of a kid that never was. He was always a good player. It was never like he was the last kid picked. It was far from that. But he was never the best player on his team yet until later in the career. Yet he's the guy that's going into the Hall of Fame. Quite a story.
We were talking about just how those players in the 90s were larger than life early in the show. And if you're young, you didn't understand how big of a grip baseball had on this town during that time period when the Indians were, when the Browns were gone and the Cavs were kind of an afterthought. So let me ask you, Al, how were things in 2002 after that season when Jim ended up leaving and going to Philadelphia? How bad was the backlash for those people that maybe weren't a part of it? I mean, you were very close, so you understood it.
Yeah, there was definitely backlash. There were fans that weren't happy about it, and I understand that. I mean, here's a guy that you thought was going to be here forever. Certainly everything he said and did made you feel like he was going to be here forever, at least leading up to that. And then, I've heard different stories, even some to this day. There's something I can't necessarily repeat, but there was a lot going on in the negotiations early. And all I'm going to say is, I still to this day think if the decision was Jim Thome's alone back in 2002, he probably would have stayed here in Cleveland. But he was getting pressure from a number of different places, and maybe not directly, but not least of which was some peer pressure from the union. They want guys that's out there. They want guys to get their max value, and I understand that too. That's what the players' union is for. So they want guys, and Jim was the biggest. He was the biggest prize of that free agent class. So they wanted him to get the last dollar he could, because what does that do? That sets the bar for everybody else. So he had that pressure. I know that there was some talk like, hey, Jim, if you don't get all you can get, you're kind of hurting everybody else in the free agent class. So, and there was more to it as well. But I think in his heart, he really wanted to stay in Cleveland. I'm pretty sure, again, if it was just up to him and there were no extenuating circumstances, I think he would have stayed. But at the end of the day, the thing that makes Jim Thome, special, and a lot of people said it this weekend, guys, and I know you've experienced a little bit in talking with him, but over the years, and, I talked to him back in the 90s when he first came up, and, I talked to him all the way through, and even when he comes back now, I'll see him and talk to him a little bit. He's a good guy to see. He treated everybody the same. He truly never changed. That's said about a lot of athletes, but Jim Thome truly is the same, now man, but he's still got that same kid in him when he came up. He treats everybody equal. He has time for everybody. He always kept his word. And I'll give you a prime example of that. And you guys have dealt with this as well as I have. Occasionally you want to talk to somebody and they give you the old, oh, hey, I've got to go take batting practice, but I'll talk to you after. And then you find them like, oh, hey, I got to stretch, but I'll talk to you after that. And they keep putting you off and just never talk to you. Now, not a lot of guys do that, but some do. Others just simply, you can't find them in the clubhouse. Jim told me several times, and I knew the schedule for the pregame. I said, hey, Jim, can I talk to you? He's like, oh, I got to take batting practice, but I'll meet you back here in 15 minutes. And sure enough, 15 minutes later, he was there waiting. That's the type of guy he was. And the last time that I really needed an interview from him, I'll never forget this, as far as just an interview goes, not just saying hello to him, but when he was with Minnesota, he was pursuing 600 home runs. I went to the clubhouse, and he's like, oh, man, I got to take BP, but I'll tell you what, as soon as I'm done, meet me on the field. As soon as I come off, I'll find you. And I said, okay, perfect. So I went out there with my cameraman. There were maybe 12 other people out there waiting to talk to him. He comes out of the cage. He sees me, comes right for me, makes sure he gives me what I need, and then he talked to everybody else too. But that's the kind of guy Jim Thome was, a special guy. Not a lot of people like him.
Man, most guys run away from me kicking and screaming. Thank you, Al. We appreciate you coming on, man. Great perspective.
You got it, fellas. Thanks for having me.
All right, great stuff. Al Pawlowski.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.